Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the
Hi, and welcome to Brain Healthy. I am your host, Jessica Aaronworth, and I'm so excited to have on the show today Lori Dennis. Lori is a psychotherapist, an author, and she is quickly becoming an advocate for Lyme disease. Lori has had a struggle with her son, I can say. Her and her son have struggled through this horrific, debilitating disease, trying to find answers, trying to find knowledge, trying to learn more about where to go and where to get help. And Lori is going to share her story with us today. She has a book coming out called Lyme Madness, and you can learn more about her on her website at lymemadness.ca. Hi, Lori. How are you?
Hi, Jessica. Great. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be able to talk about this with you today.
Well, I'm so happy that you are willing to come on and share your story. And I know that has been, it's come with its ups and downs for you. And it's been challenging, to say the least.
Yeah.
Can you tell us?
Absolutely.
Tell us a bit about what's going on and really what your story is.
So if you get me started, I won't stop. So you'll have to interrupt me at some point. I'm thrilled to be here because this is a subject that I'm highly passionate about. I live and breathe Lyme disease, which sounds strange, but ever since we've been faced with it, it's really been a hyper-focus for me. My son fell ill. He's an adult. He lives in New York. He fell ill almost four years ago with an acute set of symptoms that we just didn't understand. And prior to that, when I look back on it, he actually had symptoms more than 4 years ago. But when he got to a place where he fell acutely ill, it was very puzzling. And like everybody with Lyme disease, and I would actually venture to say everybody, we went from doctor to doctor to doctor to doctor, adding up to at least 20, one specialist to another, trying to understand what was wrong. And certainly each and every one of those doctors misdiagnosed what it was. Nobody came up with this diagnosis of Lyme disease. There was one doctor out of 20 that we saw over the course of 18 months in New York City that thought about Lyme disease and had it on his radar and tested him for it. But the test came back negative, which it is prone to do. There's a very, very high rate of false negatives with testing for Lyme disease. He was one of those people. And we shelved it at the time. But then at some point, 18 months into his illness, it just came to me intuitively. And there it was. And we got him diagnosed by somebody who was Lyme literate, a medical professional. And sure enough, he tested positive and has been in treatment ever since. And it's a very, very difficult disease to diagnose, to treat, to find recovery from, and very difficult for, and very easy for people to catch. So the number of cases that, that are out there worldwide is large and it's growing exponentially. And this is something that everybody needs to be really highly aware of because it's a very devastating disease that actually affects you in a myriad of ways. And what we're learning and hearing about Lyme disease these days, while it's getting more press, we tend to hear it on a very superficial level. And I can promise you the story is far bigger and deeper than most people understand. So that's my beginning.
Yeah. Well,
I'll let you speak now.
I know I've learned a lot about Lyme disease from you. I've heard, before we really started talking about it, I had heard about it in the media, but yes, you're right. You don't really get a clear sense as to what it is and really how difficult it is to treat. I think one of the first times I was really brought into awareness was when Avril Lavigne came out to discuss her story of Lyme disease, which is like many others where you're sent down, as you refer to it, this rabbit hole of thinking you're crazy and not understanding what's going on and really getting no answers. So what exactly is Lyme disease?
Well, so Lyme disease, as we understand it, and, you know, this science is still not fully clear, but as we understand it, and certainly as I've experienced it through my son and through all the hundreds of people that I've come to know, is that it's an immune system illness. It's something, it's a disease, a bacterial-driven disease that kills your immune system, which creates all kinds of problems in your body from stem to stern. And it is contracted in a myriad of ways, and it really does quite a lot of devastation for people because it affects you neurologically. Primarily, it is a neurological disease as it crosses the blood-brain barrier and goes into your brain and affects you cognitively. It affects you in terms of movement, and it affects you in every organ, every cell, every tissue. And what it does is essentially it turns off your immune system. It suppresses it so that you are prone to a lot of infection and a lot of other bacteria and a lot of other viruses that may be laying dormant in your system. It, because your immune system isn't working very well after you contract Lyme disease, you're constantly having to work at recovering, if recovery is even possible for a lot of people. So it's a very serious disease that really is not getting the medical attention, not even close to what it deserves, with so many people suffering. And that's a whole other part of the madness. So the disease itself is really complicated. And it looks different in everybody. It doesn't actually present the same way in everybody. Some people have, you know, symptoms that others don't. So there's a very wide list, big list of symptoms that are possible with Lyme disease. But primarily it is neurological in nature and causes symptoms like dizziness, wooziness, brain fog, cognitive issues, but also, you know, physical issues where people lose mobility and all kinds of other things. Because when we think about it, the brain is pretty important, as you know, with your platform of Brain Healthy. And when our brain is not healthy, we're not very healthy. So everything is affected. And people are affected in their heart and in their liver and their kidneys. And this particular bacteria, which is called a spirochete, kind of drills down into every cell, every tissue, every bone, every joint, every muscle, depending on how long you've been sick and how quickly you catch it and how systemic it's become. It really does wreak havoc from head to toe.
And I think the scary thing about it, as you're saying, is that it really, because it looks different in everyone, it's really one of those diseases that is very difficult to pinpoint because it masks itself, it camouflages itself, really, it seems like it camouflages itself in so many other disease pictures that it's sometimes hard to pick out.
I think that's true. I think that, first of all, Lyme is known as the great imitator, meaning that it can often be confused with all kinds of conditions such as MS and chronic fatigue and lupus and fibromyalgia. And again, the list goes on to about 350 conditions that researchers have said, that Lyme can imitate. So then there's another advocate, scientist, that I know quite well that I have spent a lot of time, consulting with, who says that Lyme is the great detonator. So not just an imitator, but it's a detonator because it kills your immune system and it creates all kinds of other illnesses as well. So it's still complicated, but yes, I agree with you. It's very difficult to diagnose for a lot of reasons, one of which is that we don't have proper testing. To be tested, diagnostically tested, is really difficult. There are very few tests in the world that actually are able to provide a reliable, stable result. Most tests that we have are really designed for surveillance purposes and not for illness. Therefore, they're just not, they come back with a tremendous number, huge number of false negatives. So people are often, you know, at the doctor's, they'll agree to test for Lyme. Finally, they test, it comes back negative, and they go on to something else. So it gets dismissed. So that's one of the starting points. But, you know, this is even more complicated than that, because apart from the fact that we don't have proper testing around the world, save for a few labs that are private and independent and have much more superior testing methods, we also have a worldwide negation, medically speaking, of this disease, which is really complicated. But for the most part, it's really difficult to find a doctor who will look at you, clinically diagnose you, agree that it's Lyme disease, and treat it. There really are only a handful of doctors in the world that will actually treat this disease. And yet there are millions of people suffering. We don't actually know the exact number, but, you know, the CDC said this year that there are at least 300,000 cases per year in the U.S., and that was a jump from 30,000. Somehow they jumped from 30 to 300 overnight, and we know that that's still underreporting. So that's just the U.S. And I know for a fact that this disease is in 80 countries around the world, every continent but Antarctica. And so if there's, you know, let's say 300,000, very conservative estimate, per year in the U.S., 10% of infectious disease is true in Canada of the U.S. We always look at that number, 10% of whatever they have is usually where what we're affected by. So let's say it's 30,000 here, and then we have Lyme disease in every other country. So we're talking about millions of people who are suffering. And in every country, we have a medical community that's, for the most part, an allopathic medical community that says, no, chronic Lyme doesn't exist. So it's a really difficult, controversial disease that, you know, I think HIV/AIDS patients felt in the 1980s, and this is pretty similar, except that I think the numbers are even bigger.
Wow.
Yeah,
If you have any questions for Lori or myself, please feel free to call in at 646-716-7979. So your son was diagnosed properly.
By me.
And then you.
You see the madness in that, right? That's why the book, I mean, that's the beginning of the madness, is that 20 doctors over the course of 18 months, all specialists in New York City, which is not a, you know, it's a pretty sophisticated medical community. Not one of them figured it out. And so it took me, and I'm not a medical professional. I'm a registered psychotherapist, but I didn't go to medical school. I had to figure it out. And that's not unusual. That is the typical experience of Lyme sufferers. So that's madness in and of itself. And then, yes, once I realized that this is what it was, I went online and found what is called a Lyme literate doctor. And, yes, he was properly diagnosed, clinically diagnosed, and diagnostically diagnosed through a certain blood serum test, and it was positive. And that was in the summer of 2014, June, so 2 years ago.
Okay. So then... And I think, you know what, I think that's a really important point. Whether you're dealing with Lyme or whether you're dealing with any other health issues, you are your own advocate. You have to be. Our world, you have to be your own advocate. You trust your
100%.
Intuition, and you don't stop until you get the answers that make sense to you. Whether it's Lyme,
100%.
Whether it's cancer, whether it's something that you have no clue. Because we often hear time and time again that people don't advocate for themselves, that they trust, you know, doctors wholeheartedly and then end up getting in a lot of trouble. And people talk about that feeling they had in the back of their mind where it didn't really make sense. So I want everyone out there to be aware that you are always your own best advocate and never lose that voice for yourself.
I couldn't agree more. That's a really important point. I couldn't agree more. And I know I've always known that. And in other circumstances in my life, from the time I was very young, I've always understood that we have to advocate for ourselves. And, you know, that doctors know more than we do at times, but sometimes we know more because we know what we feel like in our own bodies and we have good intuition. And so this Lyme disease is a case where there is no denying that. There is no choice because you're forced to navigate this really on your own except for, you know, a handful of really stellar doctors who are out there, who are willing to think outside of the box, not be, you know, somehow claimed by herd mentality, who are open-hearted, open-minded, brave, interested, and empathic. And honestly, it's a very small number, but thank goodness that those doctors exist.
So when we talk about thinking outside of the box, that has been a really big, can I call it a lesson for you? Because within the 2 years since your son has been diagnosed, I think, I don't want to speak for you, but I think
sure.
It has been 2 years where you have had to think outside of the box in order to get any type of help for him. Can you discuss what steps you took in order to get help?
Sure, absolutely. So I know that I've always thought outside of the box because as a therapist, I think we're forced to do that. And it's just in my nature. My son, I think, has taken a bigger leap than I have because he's pretty conservative. And, you know, because he's been unwell, he's really been forced to be much more open-minded, you know, in terms of healing modalities that he never would have considered even, you know, for a second before this. So what kind of help have we received? You know, the first doctor we saw was a Lyme literate specialist who immediately put him on antibiotics, and he did that for 6 months, oral antibiotics, and he actually went from being acutely ill to feeling better for sure, like never really well, but better. And when he got tested again, because the bacteria was still present in his blood, he decided to go the next step and do IV antibiotics, which for him was not the best. It wasn't the best route. It was just too difficult for his system to manage. So once we knew that antibiotics were kind of done, that they'd run its course for him and they really weren't going to help any further, and we understood that there were more problems that occurred because of his Lyme disease, it wasn't just about bacteria, we started to look into other modalities. So he has really been trying, he has tried everything, including the Rife machine, low-level laser. He's now doing IV ozone therapy, which hopefully will be really helpful, and I've got my fingers crossed. He has, for a long time now, as long as he's been ill, he's been, you know, having to adhere to a very strict diet, which has become even stricter as time has gone on. So because he has what's called a leaky gut, which most people with Lyme disease have because the gut is affected as every other part of the body is, a lot of supplements. What else? I mean, I think that's kind of the gamut for now, but there's always new things that we're learning about, understanding and trying that are definitely not things you would find in your doctor's office. Absolutely not. So there's a lot of research that goes into this, a lot of thinking and talking and weighing and navigating and consulting, but again, not things that you'd find in your typical doctor's office, but things outside of, way outside of the box.
Right.
And you know, and I really do believe that that's how he's going to recover his health. It's not going to be in any conventional way because there's nothing conventional about this. There's nothing medically conventional about Lyme disease, even though there's a lot of, you know, evidence-based research about it. It's just not well understood in the medical community, the allopathic medical community, which is the majority of the medical community. They just aren't taking the time or the interest to understand this. Therefore, there aren't any answers in that community, so you've got to look elsewhere. And, you know, I know that, you know, there are other things that he needs to be doing and has done as well, like acupuncture and, you know, all kinds of other things like that, cranial sacral work, because it is neurological, and there's a lot of symptoms in the brain and the head and the neck. So there's a lot of other modalities that he has tried, and he's definitely been open-minded to most of these. And we'll see, you know, the jury's still out as to what will get him from where he is now, which is a 7 out of 10 on a good day, to an 8 or 9 is what we're trying to, you know, work toward. And I'm also well aware, for those people who are listening, I'm well aware of the fact that it might sound crazy to say this, but he's one of the luckier ones because I think 80% of the Lyme community are not able to function the way he has been able to function. So he, you know, continues to work and do well in his job and all the rest somehow. I mean, I think it's taken a lot of tenacity to be able to do that because when you're not well, it's not easy to focus and to continue to work as hard as he works. But most people, I shouldn't say most, many, many Lyme sufferers end up being homebound and bedbound and wheelchair-bound and on feeding tubes. I mean, this is a really serious, devastating disease for many people, and there are a lot of deaths as opposed to because of Lyme disease, and those are not recorded with any kind of official in an official nature, but we know for sure that people do die from Lyme disease, A, by their own hand, because they just can't handle the suffering anymore and the lack of medical support or attention, and B, because it affects organs like your heart, your kidney, your liver, and you know, it really can lead to, there are a lot of cases where it's fatal. And I know
right.
of people for sure that, you know, that I've spoken to where that's been the case. So I don't think people understand it. Like, I think what's happened here is that it's a very, very political disease. And as a result, the population or the general population is hearing tip of the iceberg, the surface story about Lyme disease and ticks. And that's what people know. And frankly, that was all I knew 4 years ago too, 2 years ago. And that was fine for me. I didn't want to know more about it. But when you're forced to have to, you know, face this disease, you need to learn about it. And it is very deep and dark and complicated and multi-layered. And it is much more than ticks. I can promise you that. And the transmission of this disease is not just ticks. It's also can also be transmitted through mosquitoes and fleas and flies and spiders and mites, and also human-to-human transmission, which people are not always aware of. And we don't know that absolutely, but there's enough evidence out there that says that that's the case.
Yeah, I know in the States, Lyme disease has now been placed on the STD list roster.
Yes. Exactly. And also congenitally, there's a lot of cases of congenital Lyme and breastfeeding and blood transfusions. Like, these are things that we all need to really wake up to and be concerned about, because the number is growing and it's growing exponentially, and the means of transmission are much bigger and broader than we understand. And medicine is not at all catching up to the reality of this disease, and that's what's really concerning about it. And, you know, even worse, to take it a step further, and I can keep going deeper and deeper into this, but for the most part, people end up at their doctor's office, and they're often just denied any kind of support. I mean, doctors will say things like, there's no Lyme disease here, there are no ticks where we live, where would you have gotten bitten? You didn't see the bullseye, couldn't be Lyme disease, your test came back negative, can't be Lyme disease. So for the most part, people are shown the door. Or they're sent, or even worse, and I'm a psychotherapist, but I say this in a way that I'll help you understand, but they're told to go see a psychiatrist. It's all in your head. Go see a psychiatrist. There's nothing wrong with you physically. Go figure out what's wrong with you mentally. So that's happening all the time, every single day. And that's not, I mean, I think it's really important for psychiatrists to understand Lyme disease and to support it as a neurological, bacterial-driven disease, but certainly not to think that it's something that people, that it's just all in their head, so to speak. It is in their head, but it's in their head because it's physiologically driven. And, you know, I don't think that that's understood in the psychiatric world.
Well, and I think it's important for all wellness professionals to really be aware of the signs and symptoms of Lyme disease, because there is such a huge emotional component, as well as the physical component. So no matter what you are doing as a wellness professional, chances are you're going to come into contact with Lyme disease as a psychotherapist or an emotional health therapist, counselor. Again, you're going to come into contact with Lyme disease. I can't tell you how many times I have had people in my office who complain. I don't want to say complain, because that really trivializes it, but they know that something's not right with them, and they know that their family doctor is not listening to them, and they really don't know where to turn, and they end up, you know, coming in for psychotherapy or counseling because they don't know what else to do. They don't know where else to go, and sometimes people just need support to know that they are not crazy, that it's not all in your head. And sometimes it takes that added support system to really find that strength to go out and advocate for yourself and find the answers and get past that fear of not standing up for yourself.
Exactly. Well said. That's exactly right. So I do think, I mean, one of my mandates personally, once I get my book out, which I'm hoping to have published by August, my mandate after
For those of you who are interested in Lori's book, you can find out more about it. You can sign up for the list on limemadness.ca, and she will keep you informed of when exactly the book is coming out and other things that she is doing with her platform, helping people be able to share their stories. If you do have any questions for Lori, please give us a call at 646-716-7979. Sorry to cut you off there.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. So I started to write this book a little bit less than a year ago, and I will have it on Amazon and other online sources by August. That's the plan. So I'm working furiously to get this book out to help others. And at the same time, I have this personal mandate to create what I would like to call a national database of mental health professionals who are Lyme literate and or would like to become Lyme literate. Because like you're saying, you know, even if they don't end up being referred to a psychiatrist by their medical doctor, you know, help is needed because, as you said, we all need professional support when we're going through a chronic illness. It creates all kinds of, you know, issues, including anxiety, depression. There's a lot of grief that's associated with it. So what I'm looking to do is create a database of professionals who understand this disease, who want to learn about this disease, who can help their patients and or clients navigate this disease medically, and then, of course, support them in this disease because it's really difficult to manage both physically and emotionally and mentally. So I think that that's really important, and I'm just starting to do that now. I'm putting the word out to any mental health professional, psychologist, psychotherapist, social worker, counselor who wants to be on this list. And once I have this list, I'll start with their permission. I will post it probably on some Facebook groups that I belong to that are, you know, really eager to have this list because I get calls, I field calls every day or emails or texts every day asking for referrals because people are feeling very desperate and very alone. And this is a very, very lonely disease. So, you know, one thing that is interesting about it, which is probably true for a lot of things, of course, but I'm focused on Lyme, is that Lyme tends to live on Facebook. You know, I created a post on my Lyme Madness page a few months ago that said something like Lyme is treated more humanely on Facebook than in most doctor's offices, and it had a reach of tens of thousands of people. So it really struck a chord because I think that's exactly where Lyme lives because it's not really being supported in medical offices. So I think that said, you know, we all need to support each other. There's quite a community that's going on online, on Facebook, and, you know, people are asking for referrals to therapists or mental health professionals because it's just such a tough disease to navigate.
Right. So if people are listening and they're wanting to get involved or they're looking for groups or support, what are some of the online supports or sites or, like, where can they go to find that support?
Well, my suggestion, and this is what I did, and it has been tremendously helpful, is I just went onto Facebook and I just looked up Lyme Facebook groups, and there must be hundreds of them. And so depending on where you live or, you know, what's important to you, there's all sorts of different Facebook groups. So in Canada, there's one called OO Canada, and it's probably the premier Facebook group for Lyme disease, but there are hundreds of them. So I would just suggest going on Facebook and perusing and looking at the different groups and just seeing which ones appeal to you more and just starting to become part of one or two or three of those communities where you start to build a network and you get a lot of peer support and a lot of information and trade a lot of ideas. And I could never have written this book without Facebook, and I can't believe I'm saying that because prior to writing this book or prior to Lyme disease, I was never a Facebook user. But now I'm on it every single day because it's become my community, and we all share information and we support each other and we, you know, really allow each other to commiserate in the struggles of this disease. So that's what I would recommend. That to me would be the best online support that people can find. And there are a lot of people who are active on many of these groups.
So what are kind of your hopes for your book? I know you want to get it out there. I know you want to help people share their stories. What are your hopes and dreams?
So, you know, when I sat down to start to write this, I did it for very selfish reasons. I started to write it because I didn't know what to do with my angst. I didn't know what to do with all of this information that I was flooded with, and information that felt crazy to me. It was just really dark, politically driven, you know, information that just felt so difficult to understand, and also just the disease itself and the myriad of treatment protocols that people were trying, and there are hundreds of them, and I just felt flooded. So I thought that this would be the best way for me to manage my feelings of being flooded and trying to harness all of the research that I was doing on a daily basis, because I've been doing that for years now, and I'm not stopping. And so I was trying to, again, channel all of that. And then as I was writing, I realized that this could help other people too. Of course, that was always in the back of my mind. And what I'm hoping is that by chronicling our journey, which has been very long and, you know, is still happening and in very arduous and really lonely, I'm hoping that I will help people navigate it just a little bit more easily than it was than I found it to be, because I'm hoping that by harnessing a lot of these protocols and all of this information and all, you know, pointing to all of these different advocates and different theories, that people can get a lot of that information just by reading my book. And also, what really matters to me a lot is that when people read this book, whether they're just starting this journey or they've been on it for a long time, is that they feel validated in their suffering, and not to make people into victims, because that's not what anybody's looking for, but it's really hard to be that sick and not have anybody say, oh, I get it. And I think it's critical that people know that there are people out there who understand it. So by writing about our journey, and I showcase or talk about a lot of other people's stories, and, you know, I share a lot of other experiences, I'm hoping that people will feel validated in their experience and be able to share this with their family and friends and loved ones who are still rolling their eyes and saying, what's wrong with you? Because that's happening all the time. So, you know, when you think about it, if you're sick with something that your own doctor doesn't recognize or validate or support, then it's very common for your loved ones to not really believe you or think that you're making it up, or like your doctor might say, you know, maybe you're just a hypochondriac or you're just malingering or whatever terms you want to use. And so, you know, it's very, very difficult to live with a chronic illness. It's also very difficult to live with a loved one with one. So it's much easier to walk away and say, oh, they're just being ridiculous, rather than to be in the thick of it with that person. So I'm hoping that the book will help to validate the suffering and help to validate this disease as a real experience, so that people who are experiencing it and their loved ones can say, okay, I get it now. Or at least I get it more than I did. That's what I'm hoping for.
So I just want to switch gears a little bit for wellness professionals, because I think, you know, there's nowhere to go for training on how to be a wellness professional working with Lyme disease, as far as I know.
I know. Are you talking about mental health professionals or in general wellness professionals?
You know, really, I know we both come from a mental health background. So, yes, definitely mental health. But I think wellness professionals in general, because we are the people who see all the cases that really no one else can make sense of. Medical community can't make sense of it, that's when they start saying, well, go to some of the quackery places.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
that's
we don't
exactly
know what to do
right.
with you, right?
That's
so
right.
I think as,
or they don't say go, but you go and then you get made fun of. But yes, that's exactly right. But 100%, I think it is the alternative. I don't even like to call it alternative. It's the non-allopathic wellness community that actually understands this disease better than anybody. I mean, my son is currently seeing a naturopath who I think gets this disease better than any doctor we've ever seen. And we've probably seen, I don't even know how many at this point, but many. And, yeah, I think that we definitely need to figure out how to help people in the wellness field understand this disease. And certainly there are a lot of naturopaths who do, and thank goodness for them, because I think they're helping Lyme sufferers more than anybody, and homeopaths, and even energetic healers. And I definitely want to do my part in being able to educate and bring awareness to this within the mental health profession. But you're right, there aren't a lot of well-known places to go to get trained on this.
So for professionals who really do want to help and want to become more aware of what's going on and how to help people going through this difficult illness and difficult time, what advice would you give them? Like, how would they best prepare themselves? Because this is really, what you're saying is this is really turning into an epidemic. So it's not something that we can judge.
It's a pandemic. Meaning that it's global and it's millions of people. Oh, no, yeah, it's not small and it's not going away anytime soon.
No,
right.
It's not going away. It's just getting bigger and bigger. So for people who really do want to help, for professionals who really do want to make a difference, how would they start going about that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that, first of all, I think the first caveat is be careful what you read, because here's part of the madness, too. The madness exists on so many levels, but part of the madness of Lyme disease is that the sources that you think are the official sources on this disease are, in fact, not correct in what they're saying, or not reflective of what people's experiences are. So be careful of the sources, number one. And, you know, really, really look at them with a skeptical view. And then look for sources that actually are credible. And those are usually the doctors and people who are, you know, seeing Lyme disease sufferers in droves, and people who, you know, really have been doing this for a long time, like Dr. Horowitz. He's written a couple of books. There are a number of sources. I think I might list some of them on my website that are credible, that know what they're talking about, that are seeing people, you know, tens of thousands of people, and have a lot of evidence as to what this disease looks like, and have also written books to help people understand it. So mine is certainly not a how-to book, nor is it, you know, really going to, it's not going to train anybody. It's really just going to bring awareness and educate people on the madness of this disease and what's going on. But somebody like Dr. Horowitz, who is in Hudson, New York, he's got a clinic there. He's one of the premier Lyme literate doctors, and he's written a book called something like, I can't remember the title, but it's How Can I Get Better, or something to that effect. I would look at that. I would look at sources like that. In terms of, you know, self-diagnosing, he actually has a fantastic questionnaire that you can find online that is called the MSIDS questionnaire. So M is multisystemic infectious disease and Lyme questionnaire. I would Google that, and I would look at it, and I would answer the questions just to give you an initial indication as to whether or not you think you or your loved one is suffering with this disease. That's a really good document. And then in terms of training, I guess you go and get mentored by somebody who is in the field. And there are a number of people. I said a handful, but that's, you know, that's obviously not true. There's more than a handful, but there aren't that many. There are some really good doctors out there who are seeing this disease and treating it every single day. And I would, you know, go and try and get mentored by them, or start by reading their literature, their books, and trying to figure out what this looks like. And that would be a starting point, I think. But I don't know of a lot of courses. I think that there may be some that I'm not aware of, but I think that the doctors that are in the thick of it are so in the thick of it, I don't think they have time to start training other doctors because they're inundated. You know, we've been on Dr. Horowitz's his waiting list for 2 years. I've never received a phone call. So, you know, I know that he's one of the best,
wow.
But there are many. Oh, there are so many. And there are so many good doctors, but he's one of the top line doctors, and you can Google him and you can see his YouTube videos and his books, and he really understands this. And of course, there are many others like him, but he's at the helm of this for sure. So I think that's how you get started. Just start to read credible sources and understand it, and then maybe if you can, consult with those who are in the field and dealing with this, people with this disease every single day.
So if I'm, and tell me if I'm understanding this right or wrong. So in order to gain accurate knowledge about what's actually going on, you should be going straight to the people who are treating, in because there's a lot of, is the research out there credible? I guess some of it is and some of it isn't, and you just have to wait through what makes sense.
Exactly. So some of it's very credible, and there are certain sources that are and some that aren't. And again, the ones that you think would be credible are not and don't necessarily have Lyme disease sufferers in their best interest, or they're not really supporting Lyme disease sufferers the way they need to be supported. So you really have to kind of – that's why I wrote this book, because you have to wade through so much information out there. Like you do in any subject or anything, but this just tends to be – there's such a wide chasm between the people who support this disease and the denialists. And I think that you have to kind of figure out how to integrate that or weigh what's real and what isn't. It's not easy at all to navigate the information, the overload of information out there, and to understand what's real and what isn't. And, of course, you know, I think that it's still in its infancy in terms of understanding this. We don't have absolute proof that it's congenitally contracted, but you know, I think there are a lot of studies that say that it is, but you know what research looks like, and there for one study that says that it is, there's another study that says that it isn't. So we're still working on that, and certainly what I know for sure is that there is no treatment, there is no one treatment protocol that's going to get you well. That I know for sure. So it's a very, very stubborn, difficult disease that is really tough to navigate medically speaking. So I think that, yeah, I think following or modeling yourself after, you know, any one of the, you know, a handful of really top Lyme literate doctors would be the best place to start. And I'm sure there are online courses. I just can't name them right now to tell you exactly what they are. But I know that there are symposiums and seminars and workshops. And, of course, there are online, you know, hosted by Lyme literate specialists.
Right. Okay.
So that's what I would do as a starting point, but it will take time because there's a lot of information to wade through and to try to understand this disease.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
I think my brain's kind of going many miles a minute trying to really come to grips and understand all of this, because it does feel very overwhelming. It does feel, it's like, where do you turn when there is nowhere to turn?
That's a good question.
And
that's really, that's why I've been hyper-focused. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I kind of, that really comes across strongly for me when I talk to you, because I feel that wading through all this material and just the heaviness of that. And you know, as an individual, you're either really good at wading through a million different resources and sources and you keep on going and you love it, or you hate it and are struggling to get through anything to find answers.
Exactly. And let's also remember that there are many, many sufferers, Lyme sufferers, who can't afford treatment protocols. And so they end up having to just deal with it. And, you know, that's, I don't even know how to explain that, but I can't even imagine what that's like to have to sit at home and not have anybody to help you because you can't financially afford it. You know, in Canada, you can't get a medical doctor to treat you here for Lyme disease. So, I mean, I know of one actually, and he's quite heroic in my books, but honestly, that's the other part of the madness, is that it's so politically charged that doctors are afraid. First of all, they're somehow trained to believe that Lyme doesn't exist. I'm just talking about Canada right now, but this is true in other places too. Or if it does exist, it doesn't exist in a chronic state, So they call it post-Lyme disease syndrome or something like that. So what that means, this is what I think it means, it's a euphemism for, well, we think you have Lyme disease. We gave you antibiotics for a few weeks. You didn't get better. So, you know, we treated it. We did the best we could. That's all we've got. So now you're on your own, and you've got to figure out what's wrong with you because there's nothing we can do. So then you're left on your own. And then what? So, you know, first of all, in Canada, doctors are not sanctioned. There's no sanctioning for treating them with antibiotics beyond 28 days. So there are doctors in this country, as well as in the U.S., who have been reprimanded or sanctioned or are not sanctioned or they've had a lot of reprisal for their treatment of Lyme disease sufferers beyond a few weeks of antibiotics. And so they're afraid. They're afraid to treat. They're afraid to even go near this disease. It's like being a modern-day leper when you go into a doctor with Lyme disease. They look and you go, oh, I'm not touching that. Because they, first of all, know they're going to get into trouble. I mean, we've had doctors in this country whose practices have been closed. They've been annihilated by the college because they've treated people beyond 28 days. So there's more madness to it. There's so many layers of madness. So doctors are victims of this disease too. Either they're not being educated, they're not interested, they don't want to go there because it's too politically charged. They know doctors who've had their licenses taken away because they've treated Lyme beyond the so-called, you know, length of time that was sanctioned. So there's a lot of reasons, but that's all to say that in Canada, people have to go to the U.S. for treatment. The only province where it's treated with antibiotics beyond 28 days is in Vancouver in B.C., because in B.C., naturopaths are licensed to prescribe antibiotics. But I think it's the only province where that's the case. Otherwise, Canadians are forced to cross the border. There's a doctor in New York State who lives in Montreal and practices in New York State as a Lyme literate doctor because she can't practice in Canada. And so a lot of Canadians go to see her. I think her practice is probably 90% Canadians. So they have to cross the border. And you can imagine what that costs. Like, there's no OHIP here, and there's no insurance here. Like, this is expensive, and not everybody can afford that. So people are losing their jobs because they're not well. They're losing their life savings. They're losing their loved ones because they just can't sit around and deal with this anymore. They're left stranded. So, and I think that's a huge percentage of Lyme sufferers, and it's tragic. It's really tragic. So it's not just that, you know, doctors aren't supporting them. It's that they then have nowhere to go. And yes, we're talking about the research of it. So then, yes, on top of all that, you've got to then navigate it yourself, talk to people, figure out what might help, what might not help. You have no idea. It's like throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what will stick because nobody knows. You know, my son is on at least 5 different protocols, you know, currently. And as he gets better, we won't know what's going to be the reason for that. We just keep going. We just keep going and trying and doing. And it's really costly. I mean, it's ridiculously costly in terms of what this is financially. And not everybody can do that. So that's part of the tragedy, too, is that, you know, we all talk about our Canadian healthcare system and how, you know, we have OHIP and people have great access. But access to what? Access to what? If nobody's willing to help you, OHIP doesn't help you either. And that's the tragedy of Lyme disease in this country in particular. We just had a first ever conference in Ottawa that was driven by the fact that Elizabeth May was able to get a bill passed in Senate a year and a half ago that mandated a federal framework for the treatment of Lyme disease. So the conference took place this month. It was actually the beginning of this month. And the purpose of the conference was to hear patient stories. So more than 100 people came and told their stories about their Lyme disease experience and their suffering. And then they brought together, you know, doctors and scientists and researchers and politicians to try to figure out what's next. And, you know, it's very worrisome because while the conference was a really important and very historical event, I'm not sure what's going to happen next. Nobody can afford to wait. This has to be dealt with. And this has been 4 decades of people being really sick and the numbers growing exponentially and doctors saying, oh, I don't know. I don't know what to do with you, or it's all in your head, or go see a shrink. We'll give you an antidepressant. It can't be Lyme disease because we treated you with antibiotics, so it's got to be something else, or you're making it up. Or these are the responses that people are getting all the time.
Right. Right.
So yes, we need alternative, if we want to call it alternative. I don't really think of it as alternative, but yes, we need healthcare professionals that are not within the allopathic community, who are not, you know, are thinking, who are thinking outside of the box, who have different ways of helping people to heal, to, you know, to heal the bacteria, to heal their leaky guts, to heal the brain fog, to heal all of the symptoms, the myriad of symptoms that people are suffering with every single day.
So how, you know, I know at the beginning you said your son was very, for lack of a better term, scientifically minded before Lyme disease.
Mm-hmm.
How has he dealt with having to shift his belief system and everything around in order to try all these non-mainstream treatments?
Yeah. That's a really good question. I think that when you're faced with something,
Lori, are you there? Have we cut out?
Hello?
Hello? Oh. It looks like we have lost Lori for the time being. We have lost the call. But I think this is really a timely topic and a very important topic. And everyone really has to know that you are your own advocate. Trust your intuition. If people tell you you're crazy and you know deep down inside that there are answers that you're not getting, it is up to you to find those answers and to dig deep. Lori, are you back?
I am back. I'm not sure what happened, but I'm back.
Awesome. I
just wanted to finish that question you were asking me. So
yeah.
You know, I just think that when you're faced with something that's that challenging, you become more open-minded to things because you have to. You're forced to be. So as, you know, he was quite conservative in his thinking, medically speaking, before, and now, you know, I think he's just by necessity become incredibly open-minded, but always looking for evidence behind what he's doing. So, for example, you know, one of his protocols is low-level laser. Well, I can promise you, he's read a lot about the science behind that. So, you know, as much as we are, you know, these things are often called quackery, they're not. There's a ton of science behind a lot of these protocols. And he's definitely become open-minded. It's just out of necessity, which I think most people end up being. So that, I hope that answers that question.
Yeah, and I actually, I love that, because one of the things at here at Brain Healthy on this platform, and one thing I do with my clients a lot is explanations and understandings of why things work. When you are using talk therapy, why does that work? I explain to my clients, you know, how that brings together the right and left hemisphere of your brain. You can explain how low-level lasers work. You can explain how energy medicine works. I really believe in treatments that really, really work. And I think that's what people need to be more open and aware of.
And then, yes, I agree. And there's also an element of having a leap of faith. So I think that while science matters and evidence matters and, you know, it's all really important, I also think sometimes we just have to jump into something and trust that it's going to make a difference. You know, of course you're not going to do that all the time, but sometimes that leap of faith can make a difference too, because it's allowing you to let go of some of the roadblocks. So I think it's a combination of all of those things that help people to get well. And, you know, hopefully that my son is on a trajectory to getting better. I can see it happening, but with this disease, there are always relapses too. So we just take it a day at a time.
So we it's time to start wrapping up, but if you were to leave our audience with one takeaway, what would that be?
I've got to think about that. I think it would be that Lyme disease is growing in exponentially, that you need to be made aware of it and educate yourself, and that you've got to be very careful of which sources you read, and, you know, making sure that you're reading credible sources, and that you will have to navigate this disease primarily on your own and really look far and wide for who can be supportive. They are out there. So, you know, you have to take heart in knowing that they're out there, but they're not that easy to find. So this will be challenging, and hopefully my book and the many other books out there, you know, that are credible sources will help people navigate their own journey.
And I totally agree with that. And I just want to add to that, you know, never be afraid to be your own advocate, because you have to.
Absolutely.
So if you're looking for Lori and you want to reach her, you can contact her through her website at lymemadness.ca, or you can contact her on Facebook at Lyme Madness. If you're looking for me, you can reach me at brainhealthyclinic.com. We have, Lori, I really enjoyed talking to you today. I've learned so much. My brain is still spinning.
Yeah.
To absorb
so
all
mine.
Of this information.
So is mine, and I've had to process it for so long. You know, I read things and I think, oh my God, I thought I understood that, but it just always gets, there's always more layers, but I get it. It is
right.
Overwhelming, and that's why I've written this book, and I hope it helps others. And yes, if anybody wants to contact me, please do. And thank
Amazing.
You.
Amazing.
Thank you so much for having me on, for bringing awareness to this, because there are a lot of people who are suffering and need the world to understand what this is about. So thank you. I appreciate
yeah.
it.
And I think it is. It's very, very important. Thank you so much for being here with us and sharing your story and being so candid. And we will see you next time on Brain Healthy.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.